statements. Mr. Tuplinski.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Howard Tuplinski, and I represent the appellant, Robert Davis. I won't quote Shakespeare, but to quote another philosopher, Leo DeRocher, this is a case where I believe nice guys finish last. Mr. Davis won approximately $280,000 against the United States because of their...
And has the veterans' benefits been reduced?
Well, I will answer that yes and no, Your Honor, and I'll explain. His medical benefits, that is the prescription drugs that he'd been receiving, and his ability to receive continued health care have not yet been reduced, and the reason we believe is because he only recently received satisfaction of the judgment, and that determination has not yet been made by the Secretary.
Once who makes the determination as to whether it's income which reduces the veterans' benefits?
Well, I think the statute, Your Honor, provides that that amount received for settlement or payment of a judgment like this is considered income, although, ironically, I believe for federal income tax purposes,
it isn't.
It isn't. And that's
what baffles me. The government takes the dual position of its income in one case and not in another.
Now,
is that right?
That appears to be the case, Your Honor. Now, let me also
consider why we can't have an answer. Either it is or it isn't.
And I was going to get there, Your Honor. The pension portion of his benefits, the $700-something per month that Mr. Davis was receiving, have been eliminated, but the reason they've been eliminated is through an intervening cause, intervening since this trial, not related to his collection of this award. It's because Mr. Davis has mitigated his damages and, after many efforts, has finally been able to obtain Social Security disability benefits. So if this case is remanded, Your Honor, for a determination of damages, certainly we would be not be seeking that component, and I want to make that perfectly clear.
Mm.
I think that, Your Honors, you've recognized the irony here. Judge St. Eve was not convinced that Mr. Davis would lose his VA benefits and therefore ruled that he was not entitled to them. She really based her decision on two things. Number one, that there hadn't been a showing that he would, in fact, lose the benefits. And number two, she was concerned about a proximate cause issue. And that is, was the government's conduct the proximate cause of the loss of his benefits, or was it, in fact, the payment of a judgment? I'll get into that. I don't see the distinction there, but I will get into that. As I stated, Mr. Davis was receiving prescription drug benefits of approximately $700 per month.
Let me ask you why the answer to any of this matters. You seem to assume that if the VA would cut off benefits, then your client is entitled to more in the Tort Claims Act case. But the Tort Claims Act damages are just based on demonstrable loss, and loss of collateral benefits is not a loss for that purpose. This would be very clear, for example, if your client had been receiving state welfare benefits because he was destitute. It's a means tested program. He then gets this award and loses the benefits because he's no longer destitute. He doesn't get extra in the award.
Well,
why should this be any different?
Your Honor, that really is, I believe, the proximate cause argument.
It's not a question of proximate cause. It's a question of the application of the collateral source doctrine.
Well,
let me phrase it with private benefits.
Sure.
Right? Suppose your client had private insurance that paid a certain amount unless he recovers a tort judgment. And if your client recovers a tort judgment, the private insurance is cut off. What is the role of that private insurance in determining the amount of the tort judgment? The answer is it has none. That's just the collateral source doctrine.
And I understand that, Your Honor.
Why is this any different?
Well, I think perhaps not a perfect analogy, but the way that I look at it is, for example,
as Judge Bauer just suggested, workers' compensation is a great example of that. Right? You may be, your client, if he wins a tort award, may lose the workers' compensation award, but that doesn't increase the tort award.
And I understand that, Your Honor.
So why is this case different? Right, we've gone through workers' compensation and insurance and welfare. Why would VA benefits be different?
Well, first of all, I think in this case it's different because the VA itself is the tortfeasor. And I think that one of the things that public policy needs to take a look at is whether or not at the end of the day the tortfeasor is going to be punished in some way in the case. And I think that Judge Posner in the Judge Johnson case.
One can say exactly the opposite. This is, the VA benefits are like workers' compensation benefits. That is, you get them even if there's no fault on the government's part. That doesn't mean, however, that one gets compensated twice. Suppose an injured veteran gets $1,000 from the government. Right? The fact that that's a no-fault payment doesn't mean that if there is also fault, you get to keep both the no-fault payment and the fault payment. You may get the higher of the two, but you don't get both.
Well,
and your whole argument is based on the theory that your client is entitled to both.
Mr. Davis is losing a valuable benefit because he is receiving money unrelated to the fact that he was receiving these medical benefits to replace, essentially, income.
Well, the problem here really is that there is no precise mathematical way to determine what his damages are in this case, what dollar amount you put on his diminished life benefits here. And the judge, I would think most judges are, when they're picking this number out of the sky, are influenced by a whole bunch of other things. And the judge could have easily picked a lot higher number here.
Well, and that's true, except that in this case, Judge Finney didn't get there. She didn't reach the point of what his damages could be for the loss of these valuable benefits. And certainly, although the evidence of the benefits would not be...
No, but she set a number, a dollar amount, to compensate your client for the mistaken procedure that was performed here.
Well, and that's correct.
And the detrimental effect on him as a result of that. She set a figure.
She set a figure which specifically identified certain categories of loss, pain and suffering, loss of normal life, etc., and specifically found no award for the loss of these benefits. The analogy that I like to look at here is, for example,
if this were a jury trial, the jury would never have heard anything about these benefits that are being lost, that your claim were being lost. The jury would never have heard anything about that.
Well,
so the jury would have just set a figure, which it thought was fair and reasonable for pain and suffering.
Your Honor, I'm not convinced that the jury would not have heard evidence on this, because I don't liken these benefits as a collateral source. An analogy that may apply is, for example, an employee of a company is employed and gets a profit-sharing award if that individual is employed on the last day of the year. And the employer goes out and commits a tort and does something to prevent that individual from working, from being there. In that case, I would argue that not only is the employee entitled to damages for the pain and suffering, and et cetera, but also for the loss of the ability to receive these benefits that he would otherwise get.
Did the jury hear about the workman's comp payments that have been made in an industrial case?
I would speculate not, Your Honor.
That's not a speculation, friend. That's right in the money. It's a reversible error if they poke it in. Now, what's the difference?
Well,
let me really make the analogy appropriate. The worker involved in my case works for the company that is the insurance company, and he's filed a workman's comp claim. But you sue beyond the workman's comp claim, sue the company for some, and the jury still doesn't hear about the workman's comp.
That may very well be true.
Because it doesn't have anything to do with it. And the verdict doesn't take it into effect. And you don't get extra money because you lose your workman's comp.
I guess the distinction is that Mr. Davis was not receiving his VA benefits because of the injury that was inflicted upon him by the VA. He was receiving them independent of what
was... that's by the board. We don't worry about that anymore. Right? He doesn't get them, but he's not entitled to them now.
Well, he's not entitled to them under the statute, and we're not arguing that the government has to go ahead and continue his benefits. The statute says what the statute says. What we're arguing is that he ought to be compensated for the loss of that money.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
Mr. Topolinski. Ms. Hunt.
May it please the court, counsel. Let me jump right into this issue of the lost benefits that's been raised here. The district court did not commit clear error in not awarding damages to Mr. Davis for these lost benefits. It's exactly as you stated earlier, Judge Easterbrook. The problem here is that this is not a compensable type of injury under Illinois law. This was a case that arose under the...
Your brief instead of making that argument says, well, he didn't prove he would lose his VA benefits. And the premise of that, and indeed of the district court's opinion, is that if he had proved he would lose his VA benefits, then the FTCA award would go up.
Well, and maybe that was my error. I didn't make it absolutely clear. There were two arguments that we made, and the first one was based on the fact that the district court found that he didn't prove this. If you look at the record on appeal, there is absolutely nothing in there that goes to the question of what is necessarily going to happen with his benefits.
It doesn't strike me as something one proves. You look in the statutes and regulations and see what the legal consequences are.
But it's only important if it's relevant, right?
Yes, and in fact...
If it's not relevant, then why are you arguing about it?
Well, I argued that because that was what the district court argued, but the more important argument...
You really have to support the district court in everything the district court does. I mean,
sometimes, shocking as it may seem, district judges are right for the wrong reason.
Yes, and one of the reasons why that was argued is to show that there were a number of issues with what was actually presented before the district court. But as I stated before, the more important argument here, and I framed it in terms of causation, but really the problem is that this is not the type of injury where causation has been shown. Mr. Davis seems to proceed under the theory that, well, because I'm going to lose these benefits, because I'm no longer indigent, that obviously it had to have been caused by the VA, and that connection is not necessarily there. The real problem is that he's a tort plaintiff.
You could put it the other way. Until you paid him the money, he was still going to get the benefits. He'd still be entitled to the benefits. That the real tort was paying him the money.
And that was the argument that we made in the brief, is that it's the
income. I don't think it's a silly argument. It sounds reasonable.
Well,
it's why you can't hold that one up to the light very long. I mean,
yes, and it's not completely true. I mean, this is not included in the record on appeal, but he will lose. I'm sorry, Doug.
You're only supposed to argue from the record.
All right, well, then I'll stay away from that argument, Doug.
Especially when it's irrelevant.
All right. But concerning these benefits, the district court was right. Whether it was stated in the correct terms, the court was right. Tort plaintiffs who are no longer indigent, who are receiving some assistance as part of the safety net program, are not allowed to suddenly come back and recover what they would no longer be able to receive. This is no different from a case where you've got someone receiving Medicaid payments or Section 8 housing or anything like that. If you have the income, then you're no longer entitled to the benefits of that program, and that's really what happened in this case. And Mr. Davis is not entitled to recover anything additional, and the district court committed no clear error in finding that. His second argument concerns the pain and suffering in this case, and there are a couple of problems with that as well. The district court concluded that his pain and suffering was for 2 months after the surgery. First of all, we've got an incomplete record on appeal on this particular issue as well. We argued in our brief that under Federal Rule of Appellate Procedure 10b-2 that it was Mr. Davis's responsibility that if he was urging this court to reverse the district court's finding on that particular issue, that he needed to present all of the evidence that was before that court, and he did not. A couple of weeks ago, he actually went before the district court and asked to supplement the record on appeal, and that was allowed, but it still does not include everything that that court considered. The court explained and laid out in its liability findings that pain and suffering was for a 2 month period based on the trial testimony of several witnesses and various medical records in particular. And this was included in the October 24th transcript at page 13. There are no medical records included in this record on appeal. So it's difficult for this court to conduct any kind of meaningful review of the reasons why the district court concluded that his pain and suffering was for a 2 month period alone. And then the second sort of point to this is that there's still no argument in the brief on how the district court's determination that it should be limited to a 2 month period constitutes clear error. There's no argument whatsoever about why there was no factual basis, why this is clearly erroneous. There's nothing in the brief. There's been nothing presented here today. There's absolutely nothing for this court to even review in terms of that argument. Unless the court has any further questions, we would ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time is remaining? Sorry, you're out of time. Well, thanks to both parties. The case is taken under advisement.